Welcome to the Plant Witch Podcast, where we enter together into the web of life in all of its many seen and unseen dimensions. I'm Erin Schrader, and it is my honor to hold this portal to the other world. Let's enter, shall we? The thing. I really, really want to be brave. I always have. I've always had these sort of fantasies about taking on the bad guy, or taking on the corruption, or running headfirst into the disaster and being helpful and heroic. And the truth of the matter is, I've had to fantasize about that. Because it's not something I've easily had access to most of my life. I've spent a lot of my life really, really afraid. Afraid of people's anger, afraid of getting in trouble, afraid of disappointing people, afraid of doing it wrong, finding out that I'm bad, having people find out that I'm bad, people I love or respect or admire. And all of that fear built quite a cage around me. Even though I eventually did learn how to run courageously toward danger as a nurse, as a leader, as a mother, I did learn how to be heroic in situations that really called for it. I learned how to be calm, clear-headed, discerning, and powerful in life and death situations. But I still didn't know how to tell a friend I didn't agree with them. I still didn't know how to stop laughing at an inappropriate joke because I was so afraid of the backlash of calling it out. I still didn't feel comfortable being one of the only types of people like me in this small town in South Central Pennsylvania. I still felt like any time a neighbor or a business owner or a colleague would figure out who I really was and it would be over for me. So even though I could save your loved one in a life or death situation, I couldn't call out racism in a joke. I couldn't call out misogyny or xenophobia. I couldn't push back against violent and divisive stories woven into the conversations around me. I couldn't stand up for myself. If I was in a conversation and I knew I had something on the stove that was going to burn, I would just let it burn instead of making that person feel like my cooking was more important than their story. If I had to go to the bathroom, but someone else needed something for me, I would wait hours until it was an appropriate time for me to go to the bathroom. This happened a lot when I was a nurse. It also happened in normal conversations. I'd be in conversation with someone the whole time. I could be in discomfort in some way or another. Maybe I had a migraine coming on. Maybe I had to go to the bathroom. Maybe I was really hungry. Maybe my clothes didn't feel like they fit well. Whatever the discomfort that I should have been attending to for myself, I would ignore so that I could attend to that person in front of me. So even though I had all these skills, I was still afraid. All the time. Afraid of my own need. Afraid of my own weakness. Afraid of offending someone by making it seem like my need mattered more than theirs. like my need to go to the bathroom was more important than their need, that my hunger was more important than their story. My hunger. Female hunger. That's a whole other episode. And male hunger, too. Our hungers, our desires, what we yearn for, what we long for, those have been hard to access for a long time and really, really vilified and demonized. But what I really want to talk about today is the ways that I am developing courage now that seem like they would be so much easier to do than the kinds of courage I've already learned how to develop in my life. I've talked in front of rooms with thousands of people in them without being afraid. But I couldn't argue with my friend about how she was handling the pandemic. I've sat at the bedsides of hundreds of dying people, making sure they didn't suffer, supporting their families. But I couldn't tell a friend that the way she always put down all of my choices made me feel small and like I didn't really matter to her, or how I felt really didn't matter to her. So I just held it inside. I survived a wild, crazy, unmedicated home birth with lots of trauma afterwards. And I couldn't tell my friend that I didn't really have time for the 2 hour long conversations every time she called me. One part of my persona started to look like a great leader, really wise, courageous, willing to go the extra mile, wildly empowered. And that part of my persona made the way for a lot of success in my life. But underneath that shining hero were a lot of other parts that were really, really scared and deeply conditioned to never show weakness, never show vulnerability, never create waves unless it's in a way that you know you can win and you know you're right. There's no nuance. Can I die on this hill? If I can, then this persona that can respond to crisis and sit with the dying and home birth a baby, that persona can stand on that hill. But if it's something small, something that's more about my own opinion, my own need, my own desire or hunger, there's no one inside to stand for me. Or there wasn't. But now there is. I've lost several friendships over the past 5 years because of this dynamic. People fell in love with this wildly empowered part of me, but they didn't know how to love the parts of me I would never show them because they didn't even know those parts of me were there. Meanwhile, inside, these other parts of me who didn't know how to communicate what they needed, who didn't feel like anyone could stand for their needs or even cared about what they needed, these parts of me were getting hurt over and over and over and over again. And I didn't know how to protect those parts. I didn't know how to stand for those parts. I didn't know how to ask for those needs to be met. And so I kept losing friendships because of this inner division, this inner divisiveness. And for the past 2 years, I have been hard at work identifying what my real needs are, the soft ones, the ones that seem so easy to overlook in pursuit of something great. And I've been lifting those needs to the surface and really, really attending to them. My need for good food, my need for rest, my need for gentle movement, my need for beauty, my need for peace, my need for cleanliness and order, my need for time alone to read the books I love, my need for friends who will listen and not take more than I'm able to give, my friends who don't need me to be ambitious. They don't need me to take on the world. They don't need me to be in that heroic persona all the time, but actually can tolerate my mess, my confusion, my inability to act sometimes, my gentleness, my dreaminess. As I've learned how to love these parts of myself, I've found more and more people in the world who can love these parts of me too, and can love all of me, even when I'm in my persona of heroism. That's okay, but they don't expect me to be that way all the time. And so, as I've gotten in touch with these softer needs, I started to really question what happened here? What created this dynamic that made me incompetent, inept in putting forth my own comfort, my own hunger, my own need for rest, my own need for leisure, my own need for order and beauty? What made me sacrifice all of that and pour my energy into this one particular way of being that was so celebrated and so exemplified and amplified by the people around me? What happened there? How did this happen? And as I've gotten more honest and more open about this and talked to more people about it, I've come to believe this is almost a universal experience that people have as we're developing from childhood into adulthood. At some point, we get the message from our teachers and our coaches and our pastors and our parents and our grandparents and our aunts and uncles and our scout leaders. And we get this message that in order to be a good adult, we have to stop being a baby. Stop being a baby. You're acting like a little kid. Grow up. And so we ask ourselves, what does that look like? What does it look like to be a grown-up? And then we sort of fixate on a particular archetype. For me, it was the leader, the teacher, the healer. I want to be that. I want to be like that. And so I would pour all of my life force energy into that and starve off these other parts of me, the parts that made me feel like a baby, a child. So they would just hopefully just wither up and die eventually, and I could just be the teacher, healer, leader. Other friends of mine knew people in their lives who were really, really funny and just lit up a room with their humor. So they would pour their whole persona into this larger than life font of humor and laughter and revelry. And that became their persona, while the parts of them that were needy or hungry or afraid hopefully would just wither up and die in there. How do I manage my own feelings as I'm suppressing all of my needs being met while I meet the demands of other adults? And that started to create a real rift between me and my patients, which I noticed happening with all of the other healthcare providers around me. There's this hardening that can happen because we are suppressing our needs so much. And when our patients are so needy, it can really trigger our shadow material, which is what this is. All the stuff that we say makes us like a little kid or like a baby or childlike. All the things we want to have wither and die, this becomes our shadow material. And when someone else is unapologetically living out of that material, it creates a huge amount of cognitive dissonance for us. How is it okay for that person to demand I remake their sandwich because it doesn't have two pieces of cheese on it? And I've had to go to the bathroom for the past 8 hours. And I don't see that coming anytime soon. So the amount of fracturing that continues to happen inside ourselves, this is also really common in parenthood. We have these parts of us that our needs are not being met. Our needs for sleep aren't being met. Our needs for hygiene aren't being met. Our needs for socialization aren't being met. Our needs for leisure aren't being met. And then we have this really, really needy child who's asking, so much of us. It creates a real tension. And these points of tension can actually be points of breakthrough, where we regain access to what has not withered up and died. It's still very much alive inside of us. And my chronically ill patients, who felt to me to be so needy and so childlike, were that way because their defenses were all eroded by pain and extreme illness and poverty and loneliness. And that's what happens to us. As parents, as caregivers, when our defenses get exhausted and eroded, we reveal what's underneath, which is the part of us that hasn't withered like we had hoped, the part that will tantrum, the part that will rage, the part that will isolate. We revert back to these needy childhood behaviors because we've never actually brought them into adulthood with us. We've just totally invested in this persona. And that's also what happened in my friendships. Over time, when my boundaries were crossed over and over and over again, but I never actually stated my boundaries, my persona would wear away. My defenses would wear away in these relationships. I could feel it happening. A friend would call. I would see her name on the caller ID. I knew that I had just spent a lot of time on the phone with her in days before, and I would feel the boundary in my body, a rigidity, a sense of bracing for what was to come. And over again, that rigidity and bracing was taking a lot more energy from my life force, and I was starting to associate this person, this relationship, with that energy, sort of like Pavlov's dog. My body associated this friend who loved to talk for long hours on the phone with the feeling of bracing and rigidity and boundary violation. But what was really going on was that I just needed to tell her, I'm sorry, I don't have this much time to talk on the phone. I can't talk right now. I have 5 minutes. There were so many other things I could do, but I didn't have a pathway from my need to the verbalization of that need as a boundary. So instead, my body responded in these bracing feelings, like I almost was making myself sick. There were so many examples like this of people I really loved and cared about and liked a lot, who had really cool, dynamic, amazing personalities, powerful, strong personalities who gravitated to my persona, my heroic persona, the part of me that was a leader, that was a nurse, that was a public speaker, a teacher, a community organizer, a nonprofit board president. I had all of this power, all of these achievements in one part of me that attracted these amazing, brilliant, dynamic people. But I did not have the skill to navigate their power and protect my own boundaries. And so I was crushed under the weight of these relationships. Over and over and over again. And I know I hurt these people. And I got hurt. But what I've discovered through trial and error and experimentation and lots of therapy is that when I express a boundary about my time, about my comfort, about my needs of any kind, about my opinions or my beliefs. The right people respond to that by coming closer to me. They want to know what I need, what I prefer, what I think, what I care about. It's not something that they defend against or belittle or use against me, but is actually a gift to them because they want to know me better and they want me to have what I want to have. And this has been the greatest discovery of this chapter of my life. Even when the boundary I'm bringing is, I don't agree with you. And this is why. The right people in my life want to hear that, and they care. And they want to tell me what more about what they believe, but not in a way that negates what I believe. And so this sense of wholeness and possibility that is emerging out of learning to actually tend myself in relationship with others, to me, is the pathway to maturity. As we mature, as we become adults and elders, we aren't trying to bowl over anyone. We don't want them to negate their own needs, time, boundaries, priorities, in order for us to have, you know, more of their time, or for them to lie to us that they believe the same thing we do or agree with us, so we don't actually really know what's going on with them. Like, we don't want that. And so we start to understand that nobody wants that if it's a real relationship. If we're in relationship with people who want us to lie to them so that they always get what they want, or to never tell them we have needs so that they can exploit our time, those are not our friends. Those are people who are exploiting us and taking advantage of us. And it's best we know that. And it's best we stop exploiting and taking advantage of ourselves, which is what I was doing in those relationships where I didn't tell my friends that I didn't really have time to be on the phone, or I didn't really have time to go to this event, or I didn't really have time, or I didn't really agree with them. I was exploiting myself and being dishonest in order to uphold one part of my persona at the expense of all the rest of me. This kind of work, the work of becoming mature, the work of becoming adult, of becoming an elder, this is spiritual work. Because until we can do this kind of courageous internal integration, whatever spiritual gifts we receive will either be exploited or we will use them to exploit others. Because that is the fruit of this kind of immature psychological landscape. There are parts of us inside that are needy and hungry and afraid and uncomfortable, and they have no one in there to speak for them. So they come out sideways as tantrums or power grabs or manipulations. And if we start becoming infused with spiritual insight into an unstable psychological landscape, we become cult leaders, cult followers, predators, some kind of spiritual predators, or the victim of spiritual predators. So it's so important that we learn to build these bridges within while we explore the spiritual life, whatever that looks like for us, whether that's Druid or Wiccan or Catholic or Buddhist or whatever, whatever path we're on. There's a great book about this called Eyes Wide Open by Marian Kaplan. I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, but she really lays out the dangers of not doing this psychological work and embarking on the spiritual path. And she also does a great job of describing the egoic structure. I don't think she goes too much into shadow work, a little bit, but it's a good primer on all of that if you're interested in going deeper into this exploration. But in the meantime, I'm really happy to report that my relationships today are extremely healthy. I speak up for myself all the time, and the people in my life want to hear what's going on for me and what I need, and they honor those needs. And I do the same thing for them. So this is possible. It is possible for us to have these kind of healthy, reciprocal relationships that are based on authentic sharing and mutual celebration. There are some friendships I've lost over the past few years that I wish I could go back with the skills I have now and do it again. But sadly, that's not how this goes on the path of life. So we just keep going ahead and we keep healing and we keep sending these ripples out into the world. And then we find more things we need to heal, and it just keeps going on and on and on. May you find the voice inside that will take a stand for those most needy, most childlike, most afraid parts of you. And may you find people around you who encourage and celebrate and uplift all of your efforts to become whole and to share the abundance of that wholeness with the world. If you would like to support the podcast, you can find a link at plantwitchpodcast.com, or you can go directly to Patreon at patreon.com/therebelherbalist. We welcome your financial support, and we also welcome your participation in this vibrant community of humans who are working together to rejoin the web of life. The audio that you hear for the intro and outro of this podcast is the song Vikings by Alan Gray. Thank you for joining me for the Plant Witch Podcast. I'm your host, Erin Schrader. I'm an herbalist, a mother, a holistic nurse, and a practitioner of the ancient ways. Thank you for joining me, and it's time to come back to life.